Hey everybody, this is Sean of Sean and Al's Wrestling Podcast. We've got a special episode for you here. Unfortunately, my co-host Al is not with us this week, but I had the opportunity to spend an hour with the great Justin Shapiro talking about WWE, their new TV deal, what it means for the future of the industry, and just trying to put things into context, all the crazy things happening right now. Remember to follow us at Sean and Al Pod. And we will send you to that interview right now. All right, now it is time for an interview that I am really looking forward to and excited about. We have a former podcaster, but a guy who I consider to be one of the sharpest and most perceptive minds on pro wrestling today. Specifically WWE in their current status, and that is Mr. Justin Shapiro, a legend of the board. How are you, sir?
Hi, Sean. I'm excited to be here. You have a beautiful studio.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for doing the show. So I just want to start with this, because I don't know if people like totally understand the significance of this TV deal that they're signing. Like, the revenue increase, the increase in what WWE is, them signing this contract is like experiencing an Attitude Era or a Hogan Era. Like, the game is changing. It's just not as glamorous because it's not taking place on camera, but this thing is insane. So I just kind of want to throw that out there. What are your thoughts when you see these hundreds of extra millions of dollars coming into the wrestling industry?
I think one of the reasons I've always been a kindred spirit with me in terms of just being reasonable people about wrestling is that a lot of fans in extremely hardcore mindsets have a hard time contextualizing the present. Like, everything that happened before now was good and was better than now. But now keeps going forward, and the previous now then get like re-acknowledged as being actually okay. So making these arguments, we went through it with 10 years with John Cena where no one seemed to recognize that he had drastically boosted attendance from where it was. And you would hear all these arguments about how John was killing the business when in fact he was actually...
Yeah, like John's doing okay, but if they push someone else, they could be doing better. The guy's an all-time legend. Sorry to cut you off.
So at least then you had measurable things to point to. The fact that attendance went up. Pay-per-view went down, but it was corresponding to the time when pay-per-view was ceasing to exist. Like, over his whole run, it gradually got less and less emphasized. To where we are now, where it's not a thing at all. So I think there's some lazy thinking in terms of attributing this success to whichever wrestler or booker you want to credit or discredit, but you can't deny that, like, they're not in really good shape. You can't really make an argument that they're going off the rails in any way business-wise. I don't think that means that it's that Mr. Show sketch where people's value is determined by how much money they make, because I don't really love everything that's going on right now, but that just makes me reevaluate myself as a fan instead of expecting everything to change according to my whims.
But I mean, just like as a student of the industry, I'm still trying to wrap my arms around what this is going to mean. I mean, this company, they're not having any added costs. They're just going to have hundreds of millions of extra dollars to play with. What are they going to do with this money? Like, this is a small thing, I think, at this point. I'd love to see NXT maybe being live or at least on the road and not being taped at Full Sail every week. But, I mean, that's small potatoes. We could be talking about this idea that they had many years ago about having different, like, WWE territories across the world. Like, have you thought about, you know, just what this money is going to go to? Is it all going to go to the XFL?
Has it already gone there? Has it been earmarked for more XFLing? It's frightening, because one of your concerns, right, was that it seemed unfathomable but we may have gotten to a point where they were going to do the big sellout to a massive media conglomerate.
I am terrified of a 2018. I'm terrified of a 2018 Jim Herd like ruining this. I'm terrified of Vince selling because Triple H has done such a good job with NXT. He's proven to me that he can keep wrestling healthy in this country for the next 30 years until it's time for his kid to take over. I'm getting a little scared about the possibility of a sale.
So that becomes less and less of an outlandish thing, but maybe they'll become such now a self-sustaining empire that they don't need to do that anymore. They don't need to cash out like UFC because they can just have their own. I mean, it's not a vanity promotion, but they don't have to like sit down and really crunch numbers with the pencil to make things to peak programs or even like peak grudge matches. They just kind of put on a show and it builds to these quarterly super shows, and then they oversaturate things, and then hopefully people are satisfied, and then they just keep making their money.
Yeah, I was surprised when Dave Meltzer said on the board that when UFC got $4 billion, that their ears kind of started opening because, I mean, to me, you know, I don't know if you feel this way, but, like, I have this respect for Vince McMahon because for 35 years, that man's life has just been producing and promoting pro wrestling content. Like, the only time that guy has ever taken a break from work was when he was on federal trial, facing a prison sentence. Like, you never hear about Vince going, you know, missing Raw because he's on a yacht in the Mediterranean or anything like that. Like, Vince McMahon just shows up every week and produces wrestling TV, and he works out and lifts weights. What will Vince McMahon do with his life if he sells WWE? I mean, is it just going to be football? That's the thing that I keep coming back to.
That's the alarming thing. Like, the untapped angles that have happened in wrestling now, where all the people we waited to come back have come back. That's, like, the two big storylines in wrestling that have not happened yet are the death of Vince McMahon and how everything reacts to that, and the return of CM Punk. So I'm ready for both of those things, just because I don't know what else there is to watch for as a fan. But I have so much affection for Vince as just a character and a person. On some level, like, even if I'm frustrated with certain things the way they've gone for the past few years, you just, at a certain point, you have to admit that he's not, I won't say incompetent, but clearly he pulled something off and continues to do so, right? That was always one of the points you made that I liked, was everyone recognizes that Vince made the comeback when WCW was beating them, but then he could have just stopped at that point, but he rebuilt his business with the post-Monopoly Cena era, and now he's done it again with his network thing, which was ahead of the game and shifting to the streaming service and banking on TV rights in, as you said, the conversation before we started or once we started, in a way that no one really seemed to recognize was happening under their noses, but he had stopped focusing on the things that people were panicking about and pointing to, and had a bigger picture in mind.
And I think one thing that the internet really doesn't want to admit is all this stuff that we've been complaining about for 10 years about PG, about Susan G. Komen and Connor's Cure and WWE Universe and corporate branding and Stephanie McMahon out there taking pictures and all of this stuff that everybody has hated, Facebook and Twitter plugs. It all has worked. I mean, they just got $20 million to do a house show in Saudi Arabia. I mean, Vince McMahon has become Disney. Like, everything that everyone hates actually was a good plan by Vince.
Mm-hmm. And at the same time, he's become Disney and succeeded in these not unexpected ways, but just unacknowledged. And he's still, like, doing these pretend shoot angles on Raw with firing Roman Reigns and taking headbutts from Kevin Owens. Like, Kevin Owens, the SmackDown main event, why are you doing that? So it's very hard to understand this man, but can't hate him.
Well, that's where we get into the fact that you and I both are kind of unique in that we do have some affection for Vince McMahon. There's these people that have been watching his product for 30 years and still kind of hate him. And I'll admit that I even underestimate him at times. Like, mm-hmm. whenever I'm on the verge of being like, maybe I should take a break from WWE, he always finds a way to pull me back in. He always does mm-hmm. something. He's always got a trick up his sleeve. He always, like, he just does not get credit for how clever of a guy he is and how he's kept the company. I mean, when WCW went out of business, I remember Meltzer talking about, like, when roller derby, there was one company that went out of business, and then the other company went out of business soon after, and it was just never the same. But he's just kept this thing plugging along for 17 years since WCW went out of business, and it's about to be bigger than anybody ever imagined a wrestling company could be.
It's a really hard to... For me as a fan, like, I've always been into the internet stuff and the respected wrestlers. And so following WWF for me has been like, you have a sports team. If they suck, you watch them. If they're mediocre, you watch them. If they're great, you watch them. And I've not been, like, turned away to different things. I just watch them, and then I react to what they're doing, and I try and tie it into a bigger picture of where they've been in context, history, and things like that. So the last 3 years for me have been kind of miserable, and there have been so many little milestones along those 3 years that are some of my favorite things that have ever happened, between Lesnar and AJ Styles coming in being immediately shot to the top in this unanticipated way. So I think even as your enthusiasm kind of wanes, I have to keep paying attention, because you never, like, I'll watch, even if it's in DVR fast forward the next day, I'm going to be watching this product because I'm still in the back of my mind nervous that I'm going to miss something wonderful. And it may take a while to get there at this point. But there's always a possibility around the corner. Like, I didn't think Sami Zayn was going to all of a sudden become a top heel. I thought they'd ruined his career. So,
me too, man.
You can't
absolutely
stop paying attention.
And that's one thing I think that internet fans just, and I don't mean to, like, all of a sudden I'm turning into Vince Russo and, like, criticizing internet fans. I don't mean to be doing that. I'm one of the internet fans, but I think sometimes, like, we don't stop and smell the flowers. Like, everyone complains about how terrible everything is, but the last pay-per-view, three of the four main eventers were Samoa Joe, AJ Styles, and Shinsuke Nakamura. Like, you're like me, where we lived through those, like, 2003, 2004 years, where it's like, oh my god, is the future of wrestling going to be like Luther Reigns versus Matt Morgan in a WrestleMania main event? And it's like, things are pretty good. Like, it's not that bad right now, in my opinion. I don't know if you agree with that.
It's a living contradiction. Like, I don't think they should never put on a show that was as mediocre as Backlash. But at the same time, the fact that they're sort of like unrestricted from the choices they make, it breaks in both ways for a hardcore fan, because you have, like, the people they choose to push and going with Reigns for so long and never turning him, that is one, like, unmovable thing where they don't really have to adjust on the fly. But it breaks in our direction, too, because they're also not as married to getting direct results. They can push some of the guys we like and have this entire NXT promotion that really only seems to exist to bolster Triple H's resume and put on these incredible, like, 2.5-hour pay-per-views, or whatever the word special event. So there's so much... Blessings is a weird word, but you have to take the things that are unacceptable to you while realizing you're also being gifted a lot of things. Like, it was an existential crisis, what you went through as a hardcore fan in just trying to will CM Punk into being allowed to be a main eventer, and even more so trying to will Daniel Bryan into being allowed to be a main eventer. And now it's just like AJ Styles has been the number two babyface in the company for the last 2 years. And it's an unacknowledged thing.
No, yeah, you're absolutely right. I was there with, you know, at Ring of Honor shows in 2004 in Chicago, watching CM Punk and Daniel Bryan and Samoa Joe. I was at the Allstate for that CM Punk Money in the Bank 2011. I was at the Superdome for Daniel Bryan winning the WWE title and all these great moments that seemed impossible. And now we live in this world where, like, any half-decent independent wrestler gets immediately signed and, like, pushed. It's crazy how much things have shifted.
Yeah, Eric Young is going to walk in NXT and get a big pop. But,
yeah.
Wow, all right, so...
And they'll get to keep their names now. So let's talk about the current product, not just us complimenting WWE on their financial success, although I'm still trying to comprehend what this is going to mean and what they're going to do with this money. Why the heck is Brock Lesnar still the WWE champion? Why did he beat Roman Reigns at WrestleMania after it seemed like they had spent like 18 months planning for this moment? And then I thought, okay, it's because Saudi Arabia gave them $20 million for a title change. But no. Then people said, okay, it's going to happen in Chicago at Money in the Bank, which I'll be at. But no, Brock's not even working that show. What the heck is going on? Why is Brock Lesnar the WWE champion?
Oh, see, I came on the show because I thought you were going to explain it to me and then I'd understand.
Oh, no, I'm sorry.
I don't know.
Okay, I have a theory that I'll throw at you.
Yes, go ahead.
My theory is that WWE and UFC are both negotiating TV contracts right now, and Vince wants to have Brock Lesnar and Ronda Rousey be his top stars at the same time. Basically, the UFC, two of UFC's biggest stars are actually the WWE stars, and that helps them in their leverage or something.
That's so much better thought process than mine of like, well, they re-signed him so they could say they re-signed him and they're willing to let him do a fight in the meantime as they did before. That makes a lot of sense. And it's so much better for negotiations. That's why when he re-signed, some people thought it was just that to be able to put out a press release that said he re-signed with them, and this was only for a very short term. That's interesting. Yeah, it's hard for me to think beyond, like, where we've been at since he got the belt in 2014 of this idea to pass the magic of the Undertaker streak on to Reigns without having Reigns beat the Undertaker, which they made to do anyway. So, just like, in strictly wrestling booking terms, I don't know if the idea was just to keep going with it and then he'll spear him at SummerSlam and get his hand raised or next year's WrestleMania. I think it's better for the championship to have keep his reign going as a special attraction type guy who shows up to these big matches with the Strowman program from last year and the Samoa Joe program. And are they going to do things like that again this year? It's we finally understood everything, and I really don't. I need to learn to believe Paul Heyman when he does a, this is not a prediction, it's a spoiler. Because I thought every year, like, he set that up to where he gets proven wrong. But no, every time he does that, he means it.
You know what? I am like, you know, besides Memphis, like, ECW was my religion when I was a teenager, and Paul Heyman is, like, my hero. And I feel maybe he is, like, somehow... still somehow changing the industry behind the scenes, somehow secretly. I don't know what game he's playing with Vince and Brock. But, I mean, all of us, we all spent a year dreading Roman Reigns beating Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania. The crowd turned on the match because they thought they knew the finish. They were chanting, "This is awful." And then Brock Lesnar elbows Roman Reigns in the head several times, busts him open, gives him an F5, and pins him. And everyone's like, oh, well, we were mad before, but now we're just confused. No one knew how to respond. Everyone just assumed, okay, they're just delaying it, but we have no idea, which is kind of fun as a fan, that the fact that we know that they still are behind Roman strongly and want to position him strongly, but we don't really know, like, what the heck next year WrestleMania's main event is going to be or SummerSlam main event. It's kind of a confusing time right now.
Wait, it's just going to happen every year. Because, like, for all the credit I give them for that surprise, it's still, like, because of the psychology they inflicted on the crowd, they tanked their main event. Whether like it was a great, it would be a great match in different settings. People were reacting to their big spots the way they did. But the same thing happened at the Elimination Chamber, where I think everyone thought they knew the finish, and in this case, did. So they sat there. They weren't even mad. They just kind of forlornly waited to get it over with, and had this dead Elimination Chamber waiting for Reigns to win at the end, which he did. So somehow, this may accidentally like work out perfectly if he ends up losing to Strowman, or because I'm an internet hardcore fan, I might rather see him Brock lose to Rollins at this point, just that'd be such a weird uprooting of everything, the established power structure of that being pushed. But even if just he loses to Reigns at SummerSlam or WrestleMania the year after that, or WrestleMania the year after that, and we're doomed in this endless circle to repeat this, I don't know. Lesnar has maintained that unpredictability to where when he shows up, people pay attention, and I think it helps the title more than hurts it to have it on him and put it on ice for when he vanishes for months at a time. With that and the current booking of Daniel Bryan, I think we're at this weird point in May where it's in between WrestleMania and SummerSlam and Money in the Bank, where I am pretty sure I should be giving them the benefit of the doubt that it is going to peak somewhere good and we're in an awkward middle stage, but also don't want to be exposed as making a silly statement with undeserved faith in what they're doing.
Yeah, man, you said so many things that made me want to go off into different rants. I'm trying to decide which direction I want to go. We're talking about, how about we talk about this? That fan response to the Roman Reigns Samoa Joe match at Backlash. We've gotten to a point where Roman Reigns versus Samoa Joe in a pay-per-view B main event is like so unacceptable that the fans are going to be chanting Rusev Day and leaving early. And we've experienced this rise of the hardcore fans since basically, I think most people say the CM Punk pipe bomb was kind of the catalyst. And, you know, now Reddit has a huge wrestling community. And now, like, every crowd is the 1995 ECW arena. So what do you make of the current WWE audience and how WWE is connecting with them?
That is a tough thing, too, because I try to position myself above the fray with a little more self-awareness than the chant masters of the world. But we have, like, enough commonality in our interests to where I need to, like, corral them to be like, yes, reject Roman Reigns so that I can laugh at this. Or cheer for the guys I like and give them such an overwhelming reaction consistently instead of just, like, remember 4 years ago, these things were like, it's only happening in the hardcore towns of Chicago and New York. And,
right. They had like three cities to worry about, and everybody else like cheered for Cena, and it's completely changed.
Mm-hmm. And now that is their TV audience. And the people who are willing to go attend 3 hours of Monday Night Raw or 8 hours of WrestleMania are the people who share these sentiments. So it's tough because I want them to do exactly what I want them to do instead of being self-indulgent and ruining shows. And there's an entire cross-section of like the way those sort of fans react at indie shows that I'm completely divorced from. But it's become this whole like Rocky Horror Picture Show thing that, as someone who couches themselves in the protective cloak of irony, I just kind of like, okay, that's fun for you, and roll my eyes at. But if that's what wrestling is today, I try to keep the same sort of mindset as I do with the actual people running WWE. Like, instead of expecting everything to change to fit my whims and my preferences, then maybe I just have to acknowledge that this is where we're at now and either accept that or not be as invested as I have been. It's
to me, though, it's
weird because, like, how... Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Well, to me, it's like we're at this place where they're so close to being like 100% with this hardcore fan base. And I didn't want to turn this into a whole bashing Roman Reigns thing. But if they, I mean, Seth Rollins, he's got a good look. He's just a little smaller than Roman Reigns. Just put Seth Rollins in Roman Reigns' spot, and all of a sudden, like, everybody's happy, right? I mean, we're still a little mad about Big Cass beating up Daniel Bryan or whatever, but overall, if we just shift Seth Rollins into that spot, we have peace.
And all the people who wanted to take credit for him can still pretend that was their idea. Triple H made him to WrestleMania. He was the, like Reigns, he was in the initial, like, NXT, the real NXT type things, and they could just be like, yeah, we chose this guy and we made him. And even Strowman, people would be okay with that because they have, in some ways, tricked themselves into being like, well, we picked him and he wasn't forced on us. And then in other ways, like, he did become very popular by beating the shit out of Roman Reigns repeatedly as his monster heel opponent, to where then people would also, with this gigantic guy who should be, ostracized for being a Vince McMahon preference for a main eventer, people would be happy with that and be dancing the street if they had, like, willed Braun Strowman to supersede Roman Reigns as the guy. So it's just a weird time, and it's been going on for so long. You, like, wait for this Roman Reigns turn after every WrestleMania for the last 3 years, and it hasn't happened. So I want to stop envisioning scenarios where that would take place and be this big cathartic moment and make wrestling extremely, extremely fascinating. But it would. Like, he doesn't have to do the exact career arc of the Usos for the last 2 years, and you have Roman Reigns as an incredible babyface after that.
But you bring up an interesting point with Braun Strowman there. Is there some secret hidden genius to this Roman Reigns push and the fact that everyone hates him so much? The fact that Braun Strowman became a superstar based off of beating up Roman Reigns. Like, they've played the Roman Reigns card a lot. Last year's Royal Rumble at the Alamo Dome was won by Randy Orton. Normally, you know, would a hardcore fan be excited about Randy Orton winning the Royal Rumble? Maybe, but he threw out Roman Reigns to win it, and everyone was so happy. This year, Nakamura throws out Roman Reigns in the Royal Rumble and wins the Rumble. Last year's SummerSlam, Lesnar beats, pins Roman Reigns, and everyone's happy. So, like, is there this kind of, like, secret mind game being played with us by Vince, where we think we hate Roman Reigns and we're miserable, but he keeps giving us these moments that we enjoy?
Mm-hmm. And somehow he has not held the championship since, like, June of 2 years ago, whenever that was that he had his suspension, even though this whole time people have been stabbing their eyes, being like, oh no, it's coming, it's coming, it's coming. If Reigns just completely takes over from John Cena as far as being booed while selling the most merchandise and getting incredible reactions for his main events, then you just have to let them have it and say, all right, you're smart, and you did this, and you can say you meant for this to happen, and blah, blah, blah. So with the Royal Rumble ending the last 2 years and all the heat and the fan investment for that, then it's working perfectly. You've got this guy, you book him in his main programs, and you let him be sort of the ace, is that the word I'm using for it? While also, he's sort of like, and Cena did this too, works as the 1980s NWA touring world champion, where he gives guys a match and puts them over with, like, Finn Balor or Rollins in that, when he did the gauntlet and beat Roman at the end. That works. If, though, people are so experienced with the decade of John Cena and maybe waiting for something with Reigns to the point where they get disinterested, like the Mania main event this year and the Chamber finish, then it hasn't really worked out. And I don't know. I guess it could happen either way. Like, I would have expected Backlash with Joe and him to be a great atmosphere. And at the same time, like, even though that failed just a couple weeks ago or died in front of that crowd, I think your guys in Chicago are going to go nuts for this Jinder Mahal just to, like, show that they can do it.
Well, yeah, we're going really deep down like a foxhole here, but I think it's so interesting. Are fans at this point, because Backlash, everybody had to know that Backlash was going to be headlined by Roman Reigns and he was going to win the main event, and most people assumed he was going to be the champion. The show sold out. Mm-hmm. Money in the Bank sold out instantly. Are we at like this weird point where people are happy to spend $100 for a lower level seat to crap on a Roman Reigns match?
I think we're so used to attributing like success and failure to the man pushed as the top guy in the promotion. Like, everyone knows how to have these Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame arguments. Diesel is the lowest ranked champion of all time, and this guy was a draw, and this guy was not a draw. So, there's so much just going through the motions in these debates where the people who, whether they're being ironic or they're just sick of hearing people complain, are like, Reigns is a success, look at this. They made $27 billion today. The stock is up. Clearly, Reigns is like a massive success. But people show up, and if they really want to make a point, then they would not come to these shows. But if people like the product in general and like a lot of things that it offers them and don't even mind seeing Reigns in matches because a lot of them are really good, then I don't think you need the like intellectual dishonesty to attribute him as carrying this machine. But at the same time, you can say, like, we're not at the point where that's how you draw and that's what it means to be like a wrestling headliner. Things have changed so much where there's this conventional wisdom that has come up that, like, Randy Orton should be a future River Hall of Famer and CM Punk shouldn't. And I think if you just look at numbers in a spreadsheet, then maybe you might come to that conclusion. But in terms of who has been a more meaningful figure in this entry, like, Punk is a far more significant person in the wrestling business than Randy Orton has been.
Yeah, I actually did have a plan to talk to you a little bit later about guys like Edge and Batista and Orton, whether they belong in the Hall of Fame, so we'll get to that. But let's talk about this. You and I have a kinship in the fact that we both, like, we really appreciate what John Cena did for American mainstream wrestling. Like, we both lived through that depressing period where WCW and ECW went out of business, Steve Austin turns heel, things are just bad for 3 years. As much as I love Triple H now and what he's doing, that title run of the Reign of Terror, as people call it, and then John Cena rises up organically, and it wasn't even the main event of WrestleMania 21. He was below Batista and Triple H when he beat JBL in like an 8-minute match. And then John Cena carries the company on his back for a decade. And so many people were always just like, okay, fine, they're making money, but they could make a lot more money. But I know that you and I both appreciate that John Cena is like, he's on that Mount Rushmore. He is one of the all-time greats.
That's why it's been, like, I think a challenging conversation, because every time you make your point, like you said, five different things I want to spring off of. Yes, this is a conversation we've been waiting to have for, like, 7 years. no one seems to recognize that John Cena is the Bret Hart where, you know, the fans picked him and then the will of the people won out. Like, Randy Orton was Lex Luger, John Cena was Bret Hart, and John Cena got more organic reactions. John Cena was not handpicked by Triple H in Evolution to turn face and beat him and carry the company. Like, Randy Orton is to Roman Reigns, as John Cena is to, like, the five guys who people wanted to supplant Roman Reigns over the last 4 years. Bryan and Ambrose and Rollins and Styles and everyone. This narrative has started to change. And the most beautiful moment in my contemporary wrestling fandom may have been that sign at whatever September pay-per-view is called now. What is September?
I can't even remember anymore, dude. And I'm
so the sign in the crowd says it's Cena versus Roman Reigns. Cena gets to be the voice of people, make fun of Roman Reigns, and all these interviews. The sign says if Cena loses, we riot.
Oh yes, I love that.
Like, it took, there's some people who are still stubborn enough, and that's fine, you don't want to admit you were ever wrong or reevaluate any of your opinions. You were consistently right for 15 years at every point in time. But the reins has really shown, like, you don't know what you have until it's gone. And between reins just being put in the scene of position and doing that with less charisma and worse interviews and less captivating feuds, and maybe just, like, people being sick of, like, at least the scene, it seemed like there was this personal antagonism and it's gone on for so long, whereas Reigns is more just resentment that this is happening again, and the mess guy is now coming on during this. So Reigns gave people a new appreciation for Cena, and I think the U.S. title now gave people a new appreciation for Cena, to where, like, I think the emotion behind it has shifted a little bit to where he's kind of this living legend type guy, and we're acknowledging that now. You saw that a lot in the reactions to him setting up this Undertaker feud, where Undertaker was thought retired and Cena's been losing, like, 2010 Chris Jericho in every big match he had. But people still went nuts for that. It was a legendary match. And so the reevaluation of him in real time has happened. I still don't know if people have quite grasped why they're, the last 15 years or so of what happened exactly and what the differences are between then and now. But yeah, like, more John Cena. More love for John Cena is only a good thing.
No, I mean, absolutely. John Cena is the bridge that carried us from the Attitude Era to this current era where they're going to be having, like, over $1 billion in revenue a year because of these TV deals. He carried the thing on his back. And another guy who I don't think gets enough credit is The Rock. Can you imagine if The Rock was not around to headline WrestleMania in 2011 and 2012 and what tricks they would have had to pull? I remember going to WrestleMania in Phoenix. That was 2010. And the Hall of Fame was held at like a 4,000-seat theater. And WrestleMania wasn't sold out. And Raw the night after, like, you know, the upper deck, except for opposite the hard cam, was tarped off. And then The Rock comes in and has this 3-year run with Cena. And that just made WrestleMania, people don't appreciate it, that run really made WrestleMania into this brand that we know now, where everything instantly sells out, and it's like the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's kind of weirdly transformative, because the point at the time, this is another one of those things that people didn't recognize as it was happening. Like, this was going to be a gigantic match, and instead people just focused on, like, the angle this week was some more, the angle was a failure. Everyone focuses on the 29 in like less than 28, but no one acknowledges that 27 was this gigantic success where he was just kind of like involved in the peripheral angle of what John Cena and the Miz were doing. So that is bizarrely transformative. Yeah, it's gotten away from that shift in WrestleMania. Now, what year? It was like 32 was when they first started doing the 7-hour shows or 6-hour shows. So, we're in this odd time. Like, do you think there will be a great WrestleMania again if they keep doing these 7-hour shows? I thought this year was going to be great. And then, I was your show, and I think you guys were a little higher on maybe than I was, but.
Well, 3 hours into WrestleMania this year, I thought we were watching the best one since 17. And then during Nakamura and Styles, I was just like trying to stay awake. Like, it's just exhausting. I mean, it was exhausting. I mean, the Rousey match was so exhausting, and the Undertaker Cena match was exhausting, and Daniel Bryan's return was exhausting. And then we're supposed to stay hyped for Nakamura Styles and Brock Roman. And it's like, it's too much.
So, yeah, I think you can lay all that at The Rock's feet. Like, it changed WrestleMania. It built it from this super card for the fans, where they would match up to their main eventers, to now this. People complain about the guest stars, but I don't know. Like, it's just a way of life at this point. They're 7-hour shows built around part-time guys, and sometimes you end up with flat matches, and sometimes you end up with a gigantic home run, like the mixed tag with Rousey.
So, well, let me go off on another rant. I'm getting all the rants off my chest so that people won't have to hear them on future shows. Like, this idea that having guest stars is bad, like, what do you think the traveling NWA World Champion was? He was a guest star who would appear at the biggest show of the year for a territory, and their guy would face them. What do you think, you know, Andre the Giant was? He was a guest star who would go to the different territories and win battle royals. Bill Watts bringing Dusty Rhodes in to do Superdome shows. Guest stars have been a part of wrestling forever. The idea that, like, the fact that you bring in someone who's not a regular member of the roster is an indictment of your product, I think is a little silly.
Well, that can't be true, no. You pick two guys, and you set up this match, and then they never touch, and that's how you have a pro wrestling main event. There's nothing in pro wrestling about big-time special stars coming in as a surprise and having a gigantic match.
What do you think?
You just don't get it.
Yeah, I know. I apologize. And again, I'm not trying to, like, criticize people, but it's just like, you know, we just have these narratives that we stick to that we want to kind of shoot down here.
Yeah, I am all about that because at least, like, I can get it off my chest instead of just sitting.
Yeah, I still have to have people listen to my show after this. You don't have to worry about that. But to me...
You think you can tell me what to do? Know who you're talking to?
Another topic that I mentioned we were going to go into. I think that guys like Edge and Batista and Randy Orton should all be Wrestling Observer Hall of Famers. A lot of people do not. They think the brand drew. And to me, it's like WWE, just the wrestling portion of it. How much money did that thing profit during their era? Like hundreds of millions of dollars, right? And the whole point of pro wrestling is it's a business. So you're telling me that during the most profitable era in wrestling history, there's only one guy in John Cena who gets to go into the Hall of Fame and get any credit?
Yes, there's been one Hall of Fame level performer in North American wrestling since 2004. And that's all you can do is you point to the guy who was headlining and you say he was drawing the houses and that was it. Yeah, I agree. They were successful because they had an ensemble of guys who were carrying the brand collectively. When Edge or Batista's credentials get parsed out, and it's like, well, they were on SmackDown, this was this, and it wasn't on. And, well, yeah, they were part of like a collection of people and a new way of putting together the product in a post-WCW adjustment period, and it became like successful. And when those guys all dropped off, Batista left and Ed retired, and Shawn Michaels, who was a big part of that and had this entire like different phase of his career as a guy in that run left in 2010. Triple H ended as a full timer. What, the next year after the Undertaker?
Yeah, right around then.
So those are the people who were running this era the same way that, like, it wasn't just Hogan. Hogan was supplemented by Savage and, to a lesser extent, DiBiase. And they are guys who were the prominent guys in the 80s. And I mean, it goes back to what I was saying about not recognizing the present. Like, everything in the present is diminished, and everything in the past was larger than life. So now that that present is in the past, people should go back and realize there was a big drop-off when Edge and Shawn Michaels and Batista went away, and they were replaced by Sheamus and Wade Barrett, and things were drastically different at that time. So there's a difference in the careers of Edge and Sheamus.
Yeah, there's this narrative that the brand draws, and it doesn't matter who's on top. But you and I remember 2001 through 2004. I remember there was a Madison Square Garden house show that drew like 4,000 people. If you put out a product that people don't want to see, people are not going to watch and support it. So these guys who were on top during a period when business was very healthy, very profitable, they were entertaining the audience and earning the audience's money. That's how the entertainment industry works. People say that just because they put the name WWE out there, they're guaranteed success. Well, maybe you could have thought that about WCW in 1998, and then 6 months later, they lost half their fan base. You have to put out a product that people enjoy, or else they're not going to pay money. I don't. This whole idea that the brand draws and it does, CM Punk didn't matter, or Daniel Bryan, Edge, I disagree.
Yep. So, you know, you don't want to lay everything at the feet of, like, oh, Roman Reigns threw these gigantic stadium shows. I understand that thinking. You want to be a little more rigorous in the way you bring it down, but also you can't say WrestleMania is a draw because WrestleMania without Shane McMahon of all people coming back may have been less successful. WrestleMania, it is self-sustaining because it's WrestleMania and it's this destination point for fans to look forward to and make a big weekend of it and travel and do the other shows. But put on a few WrestleManias in a row that don't live up to what everyone has in mind or don't have the card that people envision as being a WrestleMania caliber, that'll drop off.
The Tokyo Dome was a huge deal for a lot of years, and then all of a sudden they were drawing 10,000 people because they put out a product that the masses didn't want to see.
Yep. Like, the early 20s WrestleManias had to leave stadiums for, and then it took a while to go back into stadiums. So that can change.
So let's win the audience back now that we've been abrasive for 45 minutes. Let's talk about someone that we all...
You're so dumb.
What's that?
Sorry, God, I'm just saying, now we've explained everyone how they're dumb
and
we're smart.
No, I know. Well, I mean, look at the stock price. But let's get on something where everyone is on the same page together, the return of Daniel Bryan. I remember the day that he announced his retirement. I remember the day that I got the text from my friend that he was cleared. We all love this guy. I go back with him to see, you know, Ring of Honor shows 15 years ago, watching him in Texas, whatever. Are they going to get Daniel Bryan right this time? Are they nervous about his injuries? Let's talk Daniel Bryan. Let's win everybody back and talk about how Daniel Bryan needs to be the Bruno Sammartino of SmackDown.
I'm right there with you. It was like waking up from 3 years of not a bad dream, just like one of those dreamless sleeps where you take Benadryl or something, like you close your eyes and you wake up and nothing really happens in between. The amount of emotion that me, a then 31-year-old man, had in this Daniel Bryan storyline in 2013 and 2014, it seems strange in hindsight that people were that invested in whether this man would be allowed to win certain wrestling matches and certain wrestling championships at a point in time. Like, people who know better still knew better, but knew so much that they got that worked up about it. It accidentally became this, like, the greatest thing that's ever happened, the most consequential thing that's ever happened. And so now, to be dropped right back in it, where it's that same kind of, like, push-pull confusion where you're like, you can clearly see this guy is incredible and has this great emotional connection, and you're pretty confident that they're going to do the right thing with them, and then they still do these other alarming things, like having him work with large Colin Cassidy in a program where you're like, oh no, I'm scared. It feels good to be invested, I guess, and caring about what happened with someone. I think, like, personally, I never would have had him lose yet, and he would never be in the ring at the same time with Big Cass, just because there has to be a better alternative than that. But I think I have a pretty good deal of confidence that they're going somewhere with him and a chase for the championship and something with The Miz that they're going to have a big program, whether that's for the belt or whether that's Miz stealing the belt from him and we redo SummerSlam 2013 all over again. I'm not giving up on something really good and appropriate happening with him at this point in time.
Yeah, to me the thing is like... Vince McMahon is worth $3 billion. He's been in the wrestling industry for 45 years. This idea that he's like this crazy old man that doesn't know what's going on, I don't think is true. So when Daniel Bryan comes back and they put him in a program with Big Cass and they have him lose on SmackDown to Rusev, I think Vince McMahon knows exactly what he's doing, don't you? Like, he's a smart, he knows what he's doing to us. It's on purpose somehow.
Yeah, any kind of alarmist mindset works, but they think he's a mid-carder, or they're scared he's going to get hurt, they're not doing anything with him. No, like, if that's your reaction to someone happens, you can be quizzical for sure. You can say, this is not really what I envisioned going on. I really think you have to be, like, willfully not paying attention to think that that's proof that, like, they brought him back to be a mid-carder who goes, but this is his big cast.
I hope you're right, but the fun of WWE is that there is a part of me that's worried that he is going to be a mid-carder, because to me, the fun of WWE is that it is like a sports team where you're hoping they get it right, but you're not sure that they will. It's almost more fun than a company where you're totally invested and know that they know what they're doing. In this company, it's like there's this sports fan type element where it's like, you're so happy when they make the right decision and do the right thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, you kind of explained that before about how it's like being a sports fan. You know what I mean?
These are my players, and these are the correct team colors, and we're going to work for them to make the correct trade so that we can be successful. I really resent the psychology of, like, the Goofus and Gallant from Highlights Magazine thing. Like, Goofus is WWE and Gallant is UFC 10 years ago on New Japan Today. Like, you need Goofus. We're going to make this thing together. We're going to learn together. Sometimes things are going to work out, and it's going to be that much more satisfying than whatever's going on in the perfect promotion at this point in time.
So I don't want to keep you here all day, but you know, we're talking about the rise of the hardcore fan and how the CM Punk pipe bomb kind of spurred that, and it's really just spiraling where so many indie companies are doing better than ever. What's your take from this All In event, which is about a half hour from where I live, selling out immediately 10,000 tickets for a show that has nothing announced except like Cody Rhodes versus whoever the NWA champion is? Crazy, right? What does this mean for the industry?
Very much so. Like, I think when I was first starting to like follow wrestling on the internet, in college and 18, 19 years old, and there's like people who are older than you who watch wrestling for longer than you, and they care less than you. And at that time, I was like, well, that will never happen to me because I like wrestling the equivalent amount in exactly the same way that I do now. And now, like, I'm one of the older people who are more, like, less in tune with things, and I feel like I'm an aging podcast guest who's coming to pass the torch to the new generation. And instead of just saying, like, I don't understand this and it's wrong, I would say, okay, this is what's happening now. Apparently, I have to figure out how that works and why that's successful. It's kind of unprecedented, but it ties into how you started the show, is just saying people aren't aware that in terms of, like, both WWE's television deal and the influx of money that's coming to them, and the fact that this thing can be so successful, and New Japan can do these shows in America, and it can, their wrestlers are very over, and Chris Jericho is going to go over there. That's a prominent thing for him to add to his resume. Like, you just have to, like, change your mindset and try and keep up with it. Or, if you can't, then instead of complaining bitterly every day about how things are wrong, then just kind of take a step back and don't be as loud about it if it bothers you that much. I don't know, there is an obnoxiousness. I think I call it Rocky Horror Picture Show type behavior. But personally, it's not for me. But if this thing, like, people be fools not to run with it and get as much out of it, and if you're Cody Rhodes and you can change your career around that way, that, like, Dolph Ziggler never had the impetus to do, then you have to acknowledge, like, there's changing paradigms.
Yeah, I mean, the funny thing about our discussion today is that I think it might come across as being like this angry, ranting discussion, and yet we're the positive ones. We're the ones saying that everything is good. I think the pro wrestling industry is in tremendous shape. I still can't even comprehend this money that WWE is about to be handed. I mean, they don't even need to run house shows or anything anymore, but it's just extra money. All In selling 10,000 tickets in a few minutes. New Japan sold out their big Osaka show, over 10,000 tickets a month in advance. Indie companies are doing great. I think Progress has a show in London that I bet does 8,000 fans like they're targeting. I think the industry is healthy, really, as maybe it's ever been in certain ways. So let's kind of close with that. What do you think about the current state of pro wrestling and where we're going in the future, and how healthy is this thing?
I'm happy for all involved, including you. I think it lets people be successful in different ways instead of one strict little infrastructure. Aesthetically, I'm not 100% on board with it. There's stuff I just don't care about and stuff I don't get, and it's an entire like run of six star type stuff. It's like, okay, well, if that's true, then I guess that's true. But there will still be things that captivate me specifically and seem like super served specifically for me, like a Daniel Bryan coming out of retirement, or like AJ Styles unexpectedly winning the world title on SmackDown in London and changing a Jinder Mahal Lesnar match to an AJ Styles Lesnar match. And as long as those possibilities are out there, like, I can put up with the stuff that's not for me. I'm not going to spend like every day trying to convince other people to have different ideas about what's happening, because I just don't have it in me anymore. That sort of realism beaten out of me at this point. But it's a wonderful time to come on podcasts and talk about things in wrestling that you like.
Yes, it is. And again, I'm sorry if I sounded like Vince Russo criticizing people. I'm just, happy about wrestling. I think things are going pretty well. So thank you so much for joining the show. You'll be on again. Oh, go ahead.
I just want to punctuate, like, it's not just wrestling. It's like that. People everywhere are dumb, but that's just what people are. You kind of have to accept that that's what humanity is.
Well, that's just a wonderful way to end the show on a happy note. Thank you for that.
Yeah, it's been a delight, Sean. Thank you for finally talking to me after all these years.
Yeah, man. I think we're best friends now. So that will do it for this week's episode of Sean and Al's Wrestling Podcast. You can follow us at Sean and Al Pod, and we'll be talking to you next week. Thanks.